At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
DJ. What's up, everybody? It's Ryan Castle of the Dissect DJs. If this is your first time joining the podcast, welcome. If you're checking back in, welcome back. Now, today we are doing something a little different than the usual. If you heard our most recent episode, we covered the incomparable 1996 classic, Gilmore Happy. And that, of course, was a response to the fact that Happy Gilmore 2, long awaited, was finally just released on Netflix. Now, when we recorded the episode, it was literally the day before release date. Could we have recorded that earlier? Probably. Might have been a good idea, but when I realized it was coming out when it was, I grabbed the band back together and we kind of did a bit of an emergency pod. So I'm glad that we were able to get it out there. We had a lot of questions, a lot of gesticulating, a lot of wondering on how the new movie would be. And we were really positive going into it. We had this very strong outlook on what it could be based off the trailer. That's all we knew of. And we had every right to be, because Happy Gilmore is one of our favorite movies of all time. And you always got to remember the golden rule when it comes to sequels. Keep your expectations at but a minimum. But having said that, and now having watched the sequel, I feel like given all the fact that we did all this commentary on it in episode 141 on Happy Gilmore, I should do 142 and do a follow-up. Now that I've watched the movie, what did I think? And that's what I'm here to do. Now, I said we were doing something a little different, and that is because I am riding this one solo. I am like Stephen fucking Glansberg at the lunchroom table sitting by himself.
What, so I gotta sit here and eat dessert alone like I'm fucking Stephen Glansberg?
That's right. I'm gonna see if I could hack this one out myself, because I'll tell you what, I'll give you a little inside baseball for you. In order to make these pods happen, we record it out of my home here in Hermosa Beach. Justin, he lives pretty far. Jason lives pretty far. Sometimes it's a whole ordeal to sort of set up a record date. And there are times where something comes out in the media, new movie, new TV show, something that happens where I kind of like, you know what, I just want to hop on there real quick and just give my two thoughts and don't really have the capabilities to call in the whole team for it. So what I like to do is maybe just sometimes hop on here and just give a little solo reacts action. You guys can tell me in the comments, give feedback wherever your feedback is given, what you think of it. I like to think that it's something that we can make work and help me put out more regular episodes, because if I have quicker access to be able to record and put things down on print, that's not where you put it down, put it into this microphone and into your earballs, whatever, then I'll be able to get more action to you more frequently. And on that note, on Spotify, we actually have now qualified to be able to get full video podcasts up on Spotify. So the whole Happy Gilmore video is available on Spotify. This one, minor bells and whistles, because I just wanted to put my voice down for this one. So no video for this one, but we will still be uploading clips onto the TikTok and whatnot, all the social medias at Dissect DJs. Cheap plug, go check it out. So I will be uploading a lot of our past video episodes up onto those episodes, so you can find those on Spotify coming soon as well. So exciting times over here at the Dissect DJs studio, because we are the DJs. I like to spin it, mix it, throw it back, and dissect it. So we're going to try a new wing of the podcast that we're going to call Castle Just Fucks Around and Talks Some Shit About Something and Reviews a Little Bit. That is a working title. We will probably go with something more like Quickie Reviews. You guys tell me in the comments which one you think sounds better, but I kind of like the first one. All right, here we go. So let's get into Happy Gilmore Dose. All right, now I wanted to break this down in a very simple method, and I've thought of three basic categories that I wanted to take on this mission with, and that's going to be these. What worked, what didn't work, and what the fuck was that? Sometimes cadence matters, you know? It's the accentuation. It's not, what the fuck was that? That's way too aggressive. I'm not trying to say that. It's, what the fuck was that? So let's get to it and break down this film that just got newly released. The first ever Dissect DJ's immediate movie review. Let's go. Oh, yeah, and I brought my soundboard with me. Don't worry. There will be plenty of that as we do here in the Dissect DJs. All right, so let's kick it off. Happy Gilmore 2. What worked? Let's start there. Let's go positive first. I like to be a positive guy, and I'm going to try to be as positive as I can for this review. Happy's updated family. Really liked that. When you come back 20, 30 years later, you want to kind of see how this person's life has progressed. We've seen what a success Happy continued to be in the world of golf. Although I will say, they said he won 6 tour championships. That's fucking crazy, dude. Do you know how many golfers have won a single major championship 6 times? 2. Jack Nicklaus and Harry Vardon. Nicklaus won the Masters 6 times, and Vardon won 6 British Opens. And that dude goes back to like the 1800s. Yeah, golf's been going on for a long time. Let's slow down a little bit on Happy's accomplishments, you know? I mean, the dude could barely putt. He needed to knock the ball off a Chevy Volkswagen. I don't even know if that's the right make, but let's just go with it. Just to sink the winning putt in his first Pro Tour championship, you know? Which, another thing that they say right at the beginning that I loved, because I totally called it on the first podcast, Happy just has a stroke of luck about his whole game.
I got to admit, you were great out there today.
Thank you.
But you weren't that great. A lot of that was luck.
Well, some might call it luck. I'd like to call it, well, luck, I guess. So what?
His whole game is like 60% power drives with his wild swing, which every time I see it, I'm also like, I don't know why nobody's tried to incorporate some sort of technique like that, because I feel like there's an element to it. The way he walks up to it when it's like on the fairway and he just kind of hacks it, it looks smooth, it looks good, and especially on the drive. I feel like there's something to that, and I'm surprised that golf still hasn't incorporated something like that. But anyways, I digress. I'm getting ahead of myself here. He says something right at the beginning about how there was a lot of luck involved in his game, and it's like, yeah, that was always a huge component.
The wins didn't always come as expected, but like Grandma always said, sometimes it's better to be lucky than good.
As I was saying, 60% of it is monster drives, 30% of it is just wild luck carrying him along the way, and what is the percentage I'm at right now? Was that 90? Yeah, it's like 10% just pure rage and aggression, which I don't think would actually help. 0% of it is putting. He still swipes at it like a slap shot, and as far as I saw, never actually got good at putting, so not saying it couldn't have figured out over the years, but the luck percentage of it is way too strong. A bird takes a shit on the ball and it like knocks it in the hole. Over and over in this movie and the last, it just clear that luck is a huge part of his game, which is a terrible game plan in any field to just rely on luck, especially sport. Anyways, back to Happy's family. Really liked how they showed the progress of them. He's got all these boys running around now, and he's got a girl. And as I had said in the last podcast, I was really hyped to see that MJF was his son. At the time, I had heard that. I'd imagined it was just he was the only son. And I sort of had my ideas of what kind of personality he would have. Sort of MJF we get in AEW. Maybe sort of like entitled, cocky, talk shit back to his dad. I was imagining that. I think that would have been like a funnier character, but the way is all the boys just, you know, carry his roughhousing ways. They seem like they're sweet, but like at the same time, they're ready to throw down. And one of the funniest scenes in the entire movie to me is when they're kind of having like a sweet goodbye with Happy, and he gets in the car and then the car won't start. And he starts punching the wheel and all the boys just immediately start beating the shit out of the car.
All right. Yeah. What's going on? All right, let's go.
Okay, let's go. You got this.
What's going on?
Oh, you did it.
Stupid.
I like the way the kids were presented, and also gonna have the same crude humor that Happy and thereby Adam Sandler has. I mean, I feel like they had like 4 different scenes where they're mooning Happy, so go figure. And then the whole story with his daughter, which is like really the main heart of the movie. He says the nice line about like, your dance class in Paris is my boss in Bruins, except for you can dance and I couldn't skate. Thought that was a good line. So yeah, I think that that element of it, like him wanting to be a good dad, you know, specifically like give his daughter something who's obviously got a great gift for dancing, I thought that was great. I will say, super disappointed that we lost Virginia 3 minutes into the movie. And I know it's a callback joke to the way his dad just got taken away at the very beginning with "Life is full of surprises" after the funeral, you know, in the first movie. But Julie Bowen is a legit star now. I feel like she could have provided so much more to this movie than she did. And that was disappointing to me, you know. When she was in Happy Gilmore 1, she was a new actress on the scene. I don't think anybody had really ever seen her before. But now we're coming off 10 plus years of her being on arguably the most popular sitcom of its era in Modern Family. She's a bona fide star now. And she's shown over and over again that she has great comedic chops. She has great timing. She could have added a whole lot to a whole bunch of scenes in this movie if she was actually along for the ride. All she really does, and it does provide a service that she's sort of there as like this emotional support and spirit. It has some special moments, so I do appreciate that, I guess. But I just think she could have brought so much more to the role, and I was stunned to see her get taken out immediately. I just think it took away of something that we could have had. I know it ends up kind of being a huge catalyst to what the story is, but I'd say we could have taken a whole shakeup on what the story was, really. I think you could have had him down on his luck in different ways without losing Virginia. But that being said, I did think that the family vibe of it was nice, and it tied in nice with how Adam himself has become like a big family guy. Which, by the way, did you know that Adam's whole family is in this movie? Now, I didn't realize this initially. I had not heard that. But it was in the scene when he's in the rehab clinic, and there's this girl, Charlotte, and there seems to be like a express amount of sort of focus being put on her. And I'm immediately like, what is it about this girl? Like, why is this girl getting an odd amount of screen time? It felt like, is this somebody I'm supposed to know? Is this like a cameo or something? So I looked it up, and I found out that that is actually his daughter, Sadie. And then right after that, it cuts to his daughter in the movie, Vienna. And I actually put down in my notes, like, Adam's actual daughter looks just like Happy's daughter in the movie. And then in further research, when I got to the credits, I see that Vienna is played by his other daughter, Sunny. And on top of that, Adam's real-life wife, Jackie, plays Monica, the dance instructor. And it's not over yet, because Adam's mom, Judith, also makes a cameo in the movie as Boban's mom, aka Drago Larson, NBA player Boban Marjanovic, who plays Mr. Larson's enormous son. And that was another one of those ones where just the way she was getting screen time and clearly not really a polished actor, I was like, who is this lady? Am I supposed to know who this lady is? Because sometimes Adam Sandler movies do this where they kind of like put like a certain focus on a person. The camera hangs on them for like an extra second or two. And you're like, okay, wait, you're trying to like give a nod to this person. Like I'm supposed to know who they are. So doing the research, that's why. It's because it's Adam's mom. So it was nice that he was able to get them all parts in this movie. But there is that moment at the end that just felt unearned where, you know, he's talking to Charlotte when at the end of the movie when they're in the rehab center.
You're a very cool kid.
You're a very cool guy. You remind me of my dad.
Yeah.
For those who don't know that that's his actual daughter, which I feel like a large portion of the audience would know, that moment is totally unearned and it doesn't make any sense to the story. Like, that was literally just a line just for Adam and his family and those, like, close to them. Like, oh, that was a wholesome moment that you had your daughter say that. But yeah, it didn't really work with the story, and I don't know. I guess Adam's earned that to be able to have this movie that everybody's waiting for him to have. And clearly, a lot of this movie is a victory lap. A lot of it is just, like, Adam flexing, like, he gets to put all his family into it. He gets to make all these references he wants. And if he wants to have a touching moment, kind of breaking a little bit of the fourth wall with his daughter, hey, he has every right to do that. Whether it makes the story better, it's debatable. But I'm going to say no. Anyways, what else worked? The return of the happy place. I thought the whole scene where Virginia comes back and they replay the original, done very well with the effects, the way, you know, they have the scene from the original where she's coming out with the pitchers of beer and then it's kind of frozen and then the modern day Julie Bowen comes up. I'm going to just slip in between calling her Virginia and Julie Bowen. There's a good chance it's going to be a lot of that in this. It really feels like they're right there, and she even, like, hands her the pitcher at some point. I thought that was a pretty cool scene. A lot of callback moments in this movie feel like a reach. That one I thought was nice. So, yeah, well done. What else worked? Benito Antonio Martinez Ocasio, a.k.a. Bad Bunny. Now, there are a lot of cameo moments in this movie, and we will get to that later. But Bad Bunny comes off the bench, and I don't know what Bad Bunny's ideal role, like, as an actor. I'm obviously familiar with his music and seen a lot of his work with WWE. I've seen him do some performance stuff. I've seen him in other pop up in other roles before, but I could never have told you what would be Bad Bunny's perfect acting role. But now that I watched him in this movie, I'm like, that is it. That is the best portrayal that I think Bad Bunny could possibly be used for. He's so funny in this movie and is so effective. I could actually see a spinoff. Let's not get wild with it. Let's not like make it a huge motion picture that shows up in theaters. But I don't know, maybe a little Netflix series action? Who knows? I like that character. And with Marcelo Hernandez from Saturday Night Live fame as sort of his little sidekick, I feel like there's legs there. I feel like I would watch a series with those two guys getting into shenanigans, maybe following through with the restaurant business that, you know, they kind of come up on at the end of it through the last match. Spoilers. By the way, this whole podcast is going to have a lot of spoilers, mostly all spoilers. I should have said that at the beginning, but if you listen to a review on a movie, it's going to be heavily implied. So sorry I didn't give you the heads up on that at the beginning, but as soon as I started talking about stuff with spoilers and you don't want to hear it, you probably clicked off anyway. So sort of 15 minutes in about spoilers, this does nothing for anybody, so I don't even know why I said it. But yeah, Bad Bunny was fantastic in it. On the note of cameos, my main thing with cameos, and again, I'm going to get more into the cameos in a bit, but I just do want to say this right off the bat. One of the things I hate most about cameos in anything is when the whole joke is, oh my God, look, it's this person. And that's the laugh. Sort of the shooter turnaround moment from like Happy Gilmore 1, which was a callback they did in this one. I do appreciate some of the callbacks I really did enjoy. When Doug shows Shooter to like coach the guys for the final tournament, and he's like, Shooter Begavit, and he turns around the same way. I enjoyed that. But that can't be the whole cameo, okay? Thing you always got to remember with cameos is a good portion of the audience is not going to know who this is. And it's like having a fucking walk-on in a 90s sitcom where they walk in the room and everybody's just like, oh, yeah! And maybe that's where my hatred for these moments start, because as a kid, you know about like 9% of pop culture celebrities and whatnot. So most of the time when that would happen, I'd be like, Mom, who is that? I don't know why everybody's cheering. Am I supposed to know this person? Probably not Ryan. Little Ryan watching TV. You don't need to know who all these people are. But if you have a cameo, that's cool. But like, give them something to do. Unless it's like the biggest star in the world. But even then, if fucking Tom Cruise walks in, give Tom Cruise something funny to say. Give him a joke. Let him add to the scene. Let him add to the story. The whole thing cannot just be, look at this person, it's Camila DeVille or some person from TikTok, you know, it's Lou the Toe Groza, famous kicker from 60s NFL era. Is that Rex Grossman that just walked in the room? That's crazy. Like, there's a good percentage of people who aren't gonna know who this person is. So the very impact of like, what, it's them, it's not gonna land unless you actually have something funny for them to say. So that's all I'll touch on for cameos for now. But speaking of it, when we're talking about things that worked, I also loved Eminem's cameo. Really came out of nowhere, you know, in a movie that was just 80% cameos. It felt like you'd gotten hit from all angles and it was starting to almost feel jaded to it. Like, all right, I could imagine anybody showing up in this. Like, I'm not going to be surprised. The way Eminem shows up as the jackass guy from HG1, his son, you know, the scene is quick. It adds a slight relevance to the story, to the point that we were at that point anyways. Then he ends up in a fight with, you know, with the All Happy Sons. Good little return moment for them, I guess. And then he ends up in a fight with an alligator. Love the way he starts calling out, Detroit, what?
I know a lot about fighting. I'll bite your leg off. You want some smoke? This ain't nothing. Now you got me really pissed.
Oh, what is this?
Oh, you want some of this?
Oh, look, come on. Look at
the game. Oh, you brought the whole family. Come on. Oh, my dick. Mom, Detroit, what?
It was about, I'd say, 60 seconds total of screen time that was absolutely perfectly executed. So tip of the cap to Marshall for making it count. And this isn't a movie where screen time was not at a minimum. There was plenty of it to go around, and a lot of it was used and exhausted, and a lot of people. Okay, I'm staying in the positive zone. We will get to that in the next section. One more thing, because we're about ready to get to the what didn't work category, but John Lovitz falling off the top of the driving range. Thought it was hilarious. I saw one time a video on social media of a guy who just happened to be like recording his drive, and then suddenly some random person fell from the top layer of the driving range, and it was a hilarious visual. And then their foot got caught, and they were like hanging. It's a hilarious visual if you're not ready for it. Imagining it being John Lovitz, all the more incredible. The only problem with it is it kind of had to then deliver like the very Adam Sandler script, which can be super ham-fisted and hokey at times. Will get to that too. So he shouts out something like, "Damn you, Happy Gilmore," or something like that. I just feel like, let Lovitz cook. Let him improv something. I feel like he could come up with something way funnier in that moment as he's hanging out upside down. But either way, visual of it, fantastic. And it was great to see him too. All right. Soundbite. Let's get to what didn't work. Whew. We had a few things. Hope you enjoyed me being positive, because it might flip a little bit. Number one thing didn't work. Over-reliance on references to Happy Gilmore 1. Look, anybody that saw this movie was a big fan of Happy Gilmore. And that movie was so massive. You're going to get a great turnout. We like some tip of the caps, some nods to the original. This movie was like 50-60% was like, remember when that happened? And then sometimes they would actually show you the clip right after they made the joke. It happened multiple times. I can't even think of one off the top of my head, but like, if you saw the movie, pick a reference. Very similar to my whole point about cameos that I want to make about sequels. If you're ever making a sequel, I think rule number one that you should just always keep in mind as you're putting a script together: does this movie work as a standalone property? If somebody has not watched the first one, maybe they've never even heard of the first one, can they watch this movie and be like, that was a great movie? I'll tell you a story. First time I ever saw Major League 2 was on a flight to Cleveland when I was a kid. I had never seen Major League. I had never heard of it. I loved that movie. I thought it was great. And you know what? I went back and watched Major League 1. I was like, wow, they even did it better the first time. I'm glad if I had seen it in the proper order, I might not have liked Major League 2 so much. But I was just, that was my team. I loved seeing all these characters and the Cleveland Indians uniforms. I loved that movie. It worked for me, even though maybe if I had actually understood it more as what the entire entity of the franchise was, maybe that would have hurt it a little bit for me. But I'm pretty certain that anybody that watched Happy Gilmore 2 that did not see or know of Happy Gilmore 1 will be like, what the fuck is going on? The whole time. There is so much just stuffing that Thanksgiving turkey. Just fucking plow this Volkswagen Beetle into this garage that's meant to fit a toy truck. Like, it really just tried to jam every single aspect of remember this, remember that, remember this person, remember that moment. Like, every single thing was just hitting you over the head like a goddamn clown mallet. Just like Happy saying,
"Now why would I want to steal the life of somebody who eats pieces of shit for breakfast?"
That was funny the way it was a quick zing when it happened the first one. When you really like lay it on like a third coat of paint, it just doesn't hit as strong, you know? Not to mention, a lot of these jokes were just beat to death in our childhood, so they're just not going to hit, and then the nostalgia alone is not going to carry it. The nostalgia alone is not going to carry it is a great theme for this whole movie. Also, the Mista lady part where they have her grave with the graveyard fight with Shooter, where there's just, they're literally, for some reason, in this tight circle, every single person they've known that died is all buried within like a 9 goddamn yard diameter. The Mista lady that literally just uses the exact soundbite from her one role in the first one. A little hacky. It didn't land for me. But when they were doing some of the flashback footage, it did make me wonder if this maybe would have worked a little bit better as like an 8-part Netflix series. Because the way they did, you know, sort of the filter on the old footage, and they would kind of have a soft little sort of sweet music in the background, just kind of remembering it, really reminded me of what Cobra Kai does with Karate Kid. Where they'll kind of play the gentle music in the background as they'll show a scene, and it has such a sentimental value to it, you almost get like choked up, like, because it reminds you of your childhood when you first watched it. And I was thinking, they did this like a series and not like in one movie, which was a little longer than it needed to be anyways, and felt like they were trying to jam so many things in. Think about all the different stories that you could have told with each episode. First of all, if you wanted to kill off Virginia, that could be something that happens in like episode 4. Okay? You build up, you give her a moment to shine in the series. She can have her few moments after that. She comes back. Could be a good mid-season surprise. Something like that, I think, gets more earned and has more weight. And a lot of the stories that you want to tell, there could be an episode that focuses on Hal. There could be an episode that focuses on the Maxi League. There could be an episode that focuses on Shooter's redemption. I feel like a lot of times when we try to do these sequels that are filled with references, cameos, and story, it just gets packed in like a sandwich with just too much lettuce on it and too many tomatoes. Probably one slice of Gouda too much, you know? You didn't need to go turkey, ham, and the grilled chicken. Too many items in there. Unless you want to make a little club sandwich, cut it up, disperse it, and then do the thing that nobody does enough these days. Release one or two episodes at a time so that we're all talking about it as the series goes. Think about like South Park right now. Every episode South Park drops, everybody's talking about it all week. You think if they dropped the whole season at once, that everybody would be talking about each individual episode? This is old school TV culture, bro. Easy shit. You want to get people talking about your show for a whole season's worth of material? One episode a week for like 6 months. Do it like that. Oh, Ryan's got a lot to say tonight. That's what happens when you hand the kid a solo mic and say, go cook. All right. That's just one part of what didn't work. What else didn't work? I brought it up earlier. Just an over-reliance on cameos. And I said my piece about this a little bit. I made the main point. You can't just have the cameo be the whole cameo, because a lot of people aren't going to get that. And there's a good chance that your cameo, if it's somebody that's super shocking, like, I can't believe they got them in this role, there's a strong chance that they probably can't act. They're not going to have a good line delivery. And if that's the case, get somebody else to do it. Or don't give them more than a couple lines, you know? Not everybody could be Bad Bunny with it, you know? Bad Bunny is the gold standard of how to do a cameo in this movie, I feel like. You know why? I don't think my mom knows who Bad Bunny is. We haven't had a whole lot of Bad Bunny conversations. But I'm pretty sure that if I watched this movie with her, she'd be like, oh, I like that guy Oscar. He was funny. Not even really knowing it was a cameo. You know why? Because he's a funny character. He was a great character for the movie. He had depth. He had growth. You had reason to root for him, you know? I actually do like the callback that Happy doesn't remember to bring a caddy, and he does the same thing he does in the first one. He just goes and finds the nearest guy down on his luck that he just had an interaction with. Thought that was it. That's how you do a callback right there. They didn't need to show the clip of, like, remember when he did that? Even though they did just bring it up in the locker room, but I'll forgive him for that because it made the moment, I think, work in this case. And then he brings in Oscar, and here we go. Now not only is Bad Bunny showing up for one scene, but huge part of the movie. I also has some of my favorite line deliveries. I like the whole part when he tells him to go to his happy place. And he's like, I'm happy now.
I'm happy now. Hit the ball.
Yes.
Oscar, you were thinking about a bear eating that waiter, weren't you?
Yes.
I thought so. Was there honey involved?
Un poquito.
Un poquito. Excellent line delivery. I'm becoming more of a fan of Bad Bunny every time I see him on screen, I gotta say. Anyways, I went ahead and just did this straight up grassroots style, okay? Old school. I could have fucking looked up a list, but I wanted to do this the old school way, putting pen to paper, although it was actually written on my Google Docs sheet here. But, you know, you get the point. I wanted to follow along, and every time I saw a cameo, write it down, and see how many cameos I could call out just with my bare eyeballs. So here we go. The cameos that I saw in Happy Gilmore 2. Ken Jennings, Jeopardy host. John Daly, MJF. Eric Andre. Martin Herlihy from SNL's Please Don't Destroy. Who was also the writer of the movie Tim Herlihy's son, BT Dubs. Ben Stiller, Kim Whitley, who plays Bassie in the rehab scene, Dan Patrick, Bobby Lee, Andrew Santino, Alex Earl, that Hot Wings guy, I don't know his name, John Lovitz, Fred Couples, Jack Nicklaus, Lee Trevino, Justin Thomas, Scotty Scheffler, Jordan Spieth, Travis Kelce, Bad Bunny, the guy with a weird side eye that's in every Sandler movie, Vern Lundquist, Jim Gray, the blondie kid from Happy Gilmore 1, which upon looking up further was actually pro golfer Will Salatoris, who just kind of looks like the caddy from the first movie, so they just said it was him, even though that is actual actor who probably went off doing something else his whole life and is now wondering, what the fuck, why didn't I get this role? Kevin Nealon, Rob Schneider, what a shocker, he made an appearance in a Sandler movie. Marcelo Hernandez, Stephen A. Smith, Haley Joel Osment, Boban Marjanovic, Nick Swartzen, Chris Berman, Robert Smigel, Lavelle Crawford, who played Slim Peterson, Chubb's son. And then there's a blonde girl that comes out and yells at him as he's walking away from the mini golf. I feel like that was one of those cameos where it's like, oh, it's her. I don't know who that is, but add her to the list because I feel like that was a cameo. Bryson DeChambeau, Rory McIlroy, Steve Buscemi, Post Malone, who actually I feel like had my favorite character name in the movie, who showed up at the end as DJ Omar Gosh. Found that to be funny. Reggie Bush, who shows up as 8-Ball. WWE superstar Becky Lynch, who showed up as Flex. Nikki Bella, who is sort of like her caddy friend. I feel like she didn't really get much time to shine, but there she was. Eminem, Guy Fieri, who was playing a character who I don't know what the fuck he was or why he was there. Clearly just a, oh, look, it's him because it's him. Nick Faldo, Sergio Garcia, Jim Furyk, Tony Finau, Xander Schauffele, Bubba Watson. And if you notice, all those last ones are either current or former pro golfers. And I only know those last ones because I saw them in the credits. And that brings me to the next thing that didn't work. Just a super over-reliance on modern-day golf. The amount of screen time that these golfers get, just fully breaking the rule of, oh, it's this guy and it's funny because it's him. Can any of those actors deliver a line? I'll give Jack Nicklaus, you know, making the Arnold Palmer little joke when he's like, lemonade, and I see they're like, Arnold Palmer, he's like, Jack Nicklaus, but I get that a lot. Like, all right, golf clap to that. You know, that's also one of the all-time greats. Him making a reference about the other all-time great who has that drink named after him. That's a good one. There's so many scenes that are just built around golf culture. And I just ask, how many people that are huge fans of Happy Gilmore are monster golf fans? And in this day and age, when there's no Tiger Woods carrying the mantle that's like keeping everybody invested, you know, I wouldn't say that golf is super cold or nothing, but it's definitely not on fire. It's a little bit of a niche sport. You know, I like sports. I'll watch the occasional, you know, big tournaments. I'm not going to recognize most of these guys on the streets. And they really built this movie largely around the idea that not only we recognize these guys, but you are going to be absolutely yanked to see them in this. And they just deliver some of the worst deliveries I've seen ever. Fucking Xander Schauffele. Three times. Hits him with a, that's what she says. Yarn. Adam, I'm going to go into further detail about some of your joke writing, but bro, can we all just decide that that's what she said has passed along 6 feet under, perhaps lying in a bed of ashes in an urn on the mantle, however you want to view it, that thing is dead. Let's leave it lie, okay? It went to bed with Michael Scott when The Office ended, okay? In their series finale, Steve Carell shows up, makes his return, says one more great, that's what she says, and he brought that joke to more prominence than it ever had, and it jumped the shark with him, okay? It's done. Maybe the occasional moment when you're out with your friends and somebody orders a sub that takes over the whole plate, and, you know, somebody is like, wow, you gonna be able to fit that whole thing in your mouth? And you're like, that's what she says. First of all, it's got to be quick, okay? And that was off the cuff, and that was just you and your friends. If you're writing for a movie or a TV show or that, it's buried. Don't ever bring it back again. I don't want to hear it again. And they said it 4 times in that one scene. I will say the one thing that did make me slightly chuckle was Travis Kelce You know, as the waiter, when he kind of had the little reaction, like he came in and like dapped him up a little bit. His reaction to the third one, that kind of made me laugh. But the fact that that whole scene was built around a horrendous "that's what she said" joke. Oh, man. Gag me with a spatula. All right. It's not just the bad jokes and the poor line delivery. You know, like Scottie Scheffler, I gotta say though, I respect their number one golfer. Dude's got a personality of a doused mop rag, okay? He got so much screen time and opportunity to like try to deliver multiple lines, which clearly does not have comedic chops, and that's fine. That dude can knock his way out of a sand trap with a hell of a pitching wedge, you know? He's got his own skills that are carrying him just fine. I don't need him all over my Happy Gilmore sequel. But it's not just the golfers used, it's the golf culture. Which brings me to the next thing that didn't work. Just a whole subplot about this Maxi Golf League, which is clearly a reference to the LIV Golf League. I would say if you're not familiar, but they didn't do any, if you're not familiar, they hit you over the head with it. You gotta be familiar with what's going on with pro golf to understand even a minuscule amount of what this Maxi League thing was. So much of it was built around the idea that you understand what LIV Golf is, which, by the way, is just another pro golf tour. Came from Saudi Arabia, where they started snatching players out of the PGA, and they kind of had a battle. They seem to have somewhat of an agreement now on how to handle majors. They're just players that are in LIV, some players in PGA. I understand it's a huge part of like the golf culture now, but not enough to like make it the, I would argue, the main point of the whole movie. That just, I feel like, totally fell flat to me. The very fact that the chaos in that whole Maxi League matchup that takes the whole last chapter of the movie by storm is incredibly difficult to follow what's going on. They're like running through a fire sand trap at one point. There's like explosions. There's wild colors. There's other balls coming out of nowhere. It was really impossible to follow. And I understand that that was the point of like they're ruining golf with this. But the very commentary that they're rallying against in this movie is why that scene doesn't work. It completely gets away from what being actual golf is. And because of it, it's a sport that we've never seen and thus impossible to follow. The last pivotal scene of the movie, when Happy has to sink a putt on some fucking wobbly thing, is literally built around the fact that he's trying to pull off a balancing act with Bad Bunny. Like, what sport are we playing in even now? Like, is this a gnarly mini golf course? Like, it just got away from what golf is and like, I honestly watched it the first time, like a week earlier, and I honestly fell asleep during that whole Maxi tournament. Like, I just didn't, it was losing me. I was kind of tired, had a long day anyways, and then I watched it again last night, just to take some notes, and it's just chaos, man. It's impossible to follow. They're just throwing cameo darts at you left and right as it's happening. I don't know. I will say, I like the idea of the shot clock in golf. That was the one thing that he said in all the chaos of like the throwing this new way of doing golf. That guy, I forgot his name, the guy that's running the Maxi League. He's like seven holes. Like I think, like I said in the last one, like I think nine is, I could do a niner.
18 holes? Boring. We do seven holes. Slow play? We got shot clocks.
My God, this is obscene.
It's a lot to take in. I get it.
And then he's like, we're going to add shot clock. And I'm like, all right, I don't want to see what that looks like. Look, people rallied against the pitch clock when that started, and I think we've all universally agreed that was a great addition to baseball, am I right? All I'm saying is, can we try it? A little shock up in golf. Can we try it? I'm just saying. But the one part I did like was when the guy who owns the runs the league is like first making his appearance, and he gets like lowered in with wings, and he's like, I'm tippy-toeing. I said I'm tippy-toe. Thank you.
Are you prepared to have your minds blown? I'm tippy-toeing. I said I'm tippy. Thank you.
Okay, anyways, last thing for me that didn't work. Just a lot of long scenes. A lot of scenes where it felt like this was the first round edit. They just felt like they kept going. I wrote this down in my notes. The original golf round that he goes on with Eric Andre goes on for like 10 minutes. They literally follow him through like five or six holes. And I get that they're trying to show that, oh, Happy's like drunk and he sucks now. And you're building up to showing like he has his happy moment where he remembers Chubbs and then he hammers it. You could have got there so much quicker. It really felt like they were trying to give the other three time to shine. And then the issue with that was, like, Eric Andre, I fucking love. He's hilarious. They didn't really give him one funny thing to say. He got all this screen time all that whole time, and he was just kind of like random golfer three. I don't know. Felt like a missed opportunity to me. Then I also wrote, the Alki Anonymous meeting goes on for like 9 minutes. Like, right after that, not a whole lot going on there either. Then the montage of him returning the tour is like 12. And then the final matchup of the maxi tour is like the last quarter of the movie. For a movie that had a lot of jokes that kind of felt like they just keep going, a lot of scenes, like, it just, somebody could have taken a hacksaw out of this, man. If we lose a few cameos, I'm all right with it. If we lose Guy Fieri, you know, you still got a paycheck, you'll be fine. He's got his fucking cars and his shows where he talks about how much these meatballs are dripping with barbecue sauce, whatever the fuck. It'll be good, because the first one was just tight. There was almost no scenes in the first one where you're like, ah, I feel like we could have just lost that scene. There are like whole sections, there are whole subplots in this movie that I feel like we could have gotten rid of. Like, for example, another thing I felt like didn't work, the whole like alcoholic subplot wasn't a huge fan of. And I get that they found it a way to get Ben Stiller back in there as a prominent thing. Another thing I'd say didn't work was just like Ben Stiller was apparently like his main foil in this movie. Ben Stiller felt like he had a cameo in the first one that worked great. They brought him back as sort of a cameo callback, and then he kind of just wouldn't go away. And he wasn't really funny enough to like continue to bring back. And they kept referencing him like he was Happy's biggest rival. Like, at one point, the kids gift him the dummy that's supposed to be him. I didn't even know that was him until the second time I watched it. And then, like, at the end, his face is on the golf ball. Like, why is he seeing his face as the one that, like, and he's, like, talking? I don't know. Felt like a joke out of, like, a cartoon show.
You never made the Bruins because you suck at skating.
You shut your stupid face.
Who's he talking to?
Oh, and your daughter's never going to ballet school because her dad's a washed-up drunk.
I'm gonna kill you!
And then the very unearned forced ending, trying to recapture the shooter running away with a jacket, with Ben Stiller's character running off with like the 3 month sober chip. Like, that's not something that they have like a whole box full of. Like, is that really something that they need to chase him? Like, you need to actually have the comeuppance be about the guy who's been the biggest issue. And I don't think there was a big enough main enemy in this movie. And it certainly wasn't earned with him. But that's how they end it. So there you go. And then I will say I did like that they did the callback to the waving, and that Abe Lincoln and the alligator were still there. They added Bob Barker and his grandma. And then, of course, Virginia at the end, you know, saying, I thought that was sweet. Okay, I like that callback. Some of the callbacks worked for me. I would say a good portion of them were just kind of dropped over your head, like a goddamn Randy Savage elbow drop off the top. All right, and that finally brings us to the, what the fuck was that segment? I need to add a little sound bite there. No, better.
What the f***?
Yes, there it is. All right. So this is an extension of what didn't work. And it's just something that I noticed for the past 20 plus years of Adam Sandler movies. And it's just, when Adam has a hand in writing, which you can clearly tell when he does, because most of his comedies these days, he does. He just sort of has a real elementary style of humor that he doesn't ever seem to be grown out of. I've noticed in a lot of movies, and it was all over this one, where he just goes for the cheap layup, you know? Like, what would make the 8-year-old in the room laugh? I went ham on that whole That's What She Said segment, because that's the epitome of it. It's just for the lowest denominator of comedy, you know? Here's a few I just took note of as I was watching when he first shows up, play at that golf course, and the guys that work there are like,
who was that? Grizzly Adams?
You know what, I'm going to have to add a groan soundboard right here just to drive these home. That's a good one. That appropriately sums up my reaction to that joke. A lot of reliance on kind of weird old homeless guys in his movies. That seems to be a recurring theme. There was multiple in this. Steve Buscemi keeps popping up as like the guy that lives across the street. That guy in the beach who is just, the whole joke is like, oh, it's like a weird like homeless guy. And that's like the whole joke. That's it. And then like at the end of a montage, he's just randomly grabbing his nips, which I think is a callback to that guy in Waterboy that was like, didn't make any sense. Wait a second. Was that the same guy? You know, that was probably the same guy. I should look that. I don't want to look that up. I'm just gonna say it's the same guy. We all know that Adam likes putting in the same people in his movies, so that's probably like a friend of his. He tossed him in because as I was watching it, I was like, why do I feel like I'm supposed to know who this guy is? I don't. But now that I'm thinking about it, I'm connecting the dots right here live. Either way.
Okay.
When he first meets the blonde kid again, who is actually pro golfer Will Zalatoris, turns out he's like, "That's your name, Zalatoris?
That's your name?" Get your name. What an idiot.
Oh. All the bad breath jokes. Just. And anytime that somebody just emphasizes a moment with bitch, like that's the. Oh, he just said bitch. Like.
Somebody went further.
Bitch. Oh, brother. This guy stinks.
It's just, here's the thing. A lot of these may have been funny at one time, maybe when I was 10, I don't know. But the point is, a lot of these are just as a layup. They take no real hard thought. You know the joke of like, you had like 100 chimps in a room and they all like, they would eventually write Shakespeare. Like, I think it's more closer to that. If you put 10 year-olds in a room, they're all gonna eventually come up with a handful of Adam Sandler movie jokes. I think that's more accurate. And I don't know, I just like a little bit more creativity, a little bit more well thought out, intrinsic humor. Something comes around, it's delivered well, I don't know. I love a good comedy, and it kind of sucks because we don't get enough comedy movies nowadays, and I miss them. But there's still comedy to be had, you know? I don't know, it just takes the easy joke a lot. And I think I've come to this point with my realization of Adam Sandler. As I mentioned in the last podcast, I think he's gotten so much better as an actor. I really liked him in Uncut Gems, and I really liked him in Hustler. He has some really good acting moments in this one when he's kind of going through his struggles and stuff. Like, he's developed to me as a much better like person as an actor than he is like delivering comedy. And I think I'm at a point where I'd kind of just like to see him, you know, just focus more on that. Like, do some good dramas. He could probably win an Oscar. You know, I know there was Oscar buzz around him for Uncut Gems and stuff. I think he has it in him. But his humor is too basic. It's too elementary. And I feel like as long as he kind of hangs around that end of the hoop, he's just going to be putting in layups. That's just where we are with him. And I think that he's matured as a performer and he kind of just needs to realize it and harness it. So that's where I'm at with Adam. Still love seeing these characters together as much as a lot of it was a swing and a miss. And that seems to be the general sentiment I'm seeing on the onlines. I did enjoy watching these characters and seeing the progression of who Happy is now. That was fun. But as I said at the beginning, you always got to remember rule one when watching a sequel, expectations low. And that reminds me, when we were talking about sequels that we were disappointed with on the last podcast, I forgot to mention Anchorman 2, only because that was the ultimate I had built up in my mind. Like, there's no way this movie fails. Will Ferrell, to me, is at his absolute funniest when he's Ron Burgundy. And around that time, there was a bunch, he was popping up on a bunch of commercials and just like segments on like SportsCenter and stuff, and it seems like his ability to riff, come up with references, and the way he just carries himself as Ron Burgundy is just home run every time. Add on top of that, you throw all those other guys in there, Paul Rudd, Steve Carell, David Koechner, and then that movie, again, similar to this one, I feel like they were just trying to fit too many things in at the same time. I read right before I watched it that the original cut was 5 hours, which should have been a massive red flag. I actually went to see that movie in the theaters. I never go to theaters anymore. I went to the theater because I was so excited to see that movie. And it was one of those moments where I had like 15 minutes in, I had the slow realization, oh, what? Is this going to be fucking terrible? And it had no direction. So at one point, there's like a whole part of the movie where it's like a pet shark. There's another part of the movie where like he's dating a black woman and the whole joke is like, isn't that crazy? He'd be dead. He can't stop saying black at the dinner table. That's wild, you know, and a whole other part where he's blind. Anyways, that movie was, I think, the ultimate jump the shark moment for me with sequels, where I was like, never get your hopes up for a sequel again. And this one, I kind of let it happen a little bit. I was really looking forward to this one, and I would just say pretty underwhelmed. I was pretty underwhelmed, but I guess when I look back on it, shouldn't be surprised. So that's where I've landed. Now to close it out, let's just run through the final C notes. That's how I like to end these. And that's just where I sweep up the last few notes that I took on the movie that I haven't brought up yet. Put the crumbs in a basket. I get under the boards and start snatching rebounds like Charles Barkley. Let's go to the final C notes. Yeah. like that soundbite for that. All right, let's see what we got. We need that Happy Gilmore golf game. Are you fucking kidding me? How are you going to tease that and not actually release it? That's the sequel we need. A combination of golf and fighting game? Are you kidding me? You could add all the characters from the movie, and at this point, we have a whole host of them. It'd be like when Street Fighter first expanded to like 18 characters, and you had to go to like a second page to pick the players. We got a bunch of players we could pick with. You could start throwing some pros in there now that they're a part of the whole universe too.
So you can!
You could have like 50 characters involved. And you could choose between playing golf or fighting or a combination of the two. You could do a career mode where you never know where a fight's going to break out. I haven't played a golf game in years. Do they have career mode where you have to do like random missions? You know how in Street Fighter there's just a random bonus round where you have to beat up a car and like destroy it to bits in an allotted amount of time?
Fight!
How about Happy does that with his fucking driver?
Sonic Boom!
Same way he starts beating the shit out of his car when it won't start. Start like that and it's just like, Happy, you have 30 seconds to destroy your cruiser.
Tiger uppercut!
I gotta get that golf game out there. Looked awesome. I like that Happy has hosted SNL more times than Adam has. In the intro moment when he's talking about his life, bringing it up to speed, he mentions that he's hosted Saturday Night Live like 4 times or something. Famously, Adam Sandler, who was on the show for several years and then got fired, stayed away from the show for like 20 years, was not invited back until he finally came back to host one time, and I want to say around 2018-19. As far as I know, I think I get this right, he's hosted only one time. Maybe two, but I'm pretty sure it's just once. And meanwhile, Happy's hosting like 4 or 5 times. Thought that was funny. My favorite joke of the movie comes right at the beginning when he thinks his car is getting broken into and he runs out there and he just says, "Hey, can you hold my beer?" And then he gives it to him and he punches him in the face.
Then I caught some guy trying to break into my Ferrari. "Hey, can you hold my beer?" Oh! The guy wasn't a thief, he was a repo man.
Dude, can you let me explain?
Turns out I didn't know I had to renew the lease.
I gotta say, the first 15 minutes, I thought we were off and running. I was upset and shocked to see that Virginia died, but I'd say the first like 15% of it, I was like, all right, I feel like this is going somewhere good. And then we meet the family. I thought the initial meeting of the family was nice. You meet his daughter, all the boys and everything like that. It seemed like we were going somewhere good. And then it just kind of stalled. I feel like it really kind of started stalling when he starts trying to get back into playing golf. We have that long round with those other people. It literally felt like we were just sitting in the round with them. And you were just like walking along as like their caddy while these random kids play fucking a round of golf and think they're cooler than they are and shit. So that's right around the point where I think they lost me and it never really pulled me back in. It sounds trite, but the lady playing Happy's grandma moves nothing like her. Just the moment where she, you know, obviously that woman's dead. I mean, she was super old when the first one happened, so she's no longer with us. But they try to redo her with, like, the kiss mask. And you can just tell by the way the woman moves. Like, that's not Happy's grandma. You just put a mask on some other random woman. Get the fuck out of here. I love that Happy's attic is loaded with the giant checks. Thought that was a funny callback. I think I probably would do if I ever won something via big check. There's no way I'm just trashing it. You could easily slide that in the corner of a garage somewhere. Good decorative piece. I thought the terrible Happy statue bust was funny. Just with the recent pickup in bad statue bust culture. We had like the Ronaldo one, Dwayne Wade one. That was a fine joke. The whole shoe up the ass and like the cutting of the lower lumbar hip ligament being a main subplot to the end of the movie was odd. I don't know. Thought that was stupid. And that whole last round of golf, just, hey, it lost me in 8 different ways. It was fun seeing Nick Swartzen pop up in that little throwback clip. Happy's hockey alarm clock was sick. Little hockey guy in it. When it goes off, it makes a little hockey horn. I thought that was great. And then the last thing I have is just overall, the movie just didn't seem to have any real stakes. They didn't give me enough to really get invested about. It just kind of felt like a sweep everything, a catch everything all. And when he kind of makes the bet with a guy at the end, like, oh, and Oscar gets a restaurant and you got to pay for my daughter's thing. Like, obviously, like he's going to miss it after that happens. Like, oh, so you're going to get everything you want from, you're just going to throw that in there at the end. They didn't go into the match with any stakes, just to toss it in the bucket right at the end. Just be like, oh, look, there he is. And ends up winning stuff that matters. I don't know. It just felt like an easy catch-all. I never felt like there was any real driving force of like what we're rooting for, what we're supposed to care about, who is the main villain, what's the general arc of the story. Like I said, I think this could have been done much better as a series. That's where I've landed. Because then each episode can kind of have its own story, and you could maybe develop something over the series that we're working towards, and maybe even then have a little cliffhanger to maybe say, oh, we could keep this Happy Gilmore thing going. We could keep the train riding as an ongoing series. But in terms of like movies, I think after this one, we're all good on the Happy Gilmore as a franchise movie. I'm glad that they came back to it and bookended it. I wish they delivered The Haymaker a little better. But like I said, it was good to see everybody back in their roles. And Happy toss on the old Bruins jersey and get after it again. And overall, I'm happy that it happened. But I do wish it was a little better. But anyways, that was my first attempt at solo guying this whole pod thing. Let me know what you guys think. Give your thoughts. Be sure to catch us on the other socials at DissectGJs, TikTok, Instagram, all the good stuff. But that's it from here. Hope you enjoyed this little quickie review, which probably, once I got going, ended up being a little bit longer than a quickie review. But if you made it through the end, I'll take that as enjoyment. And I'll tip my Chubbs golf cap and give him one of these. Next!